Okay, so continuing on, Prabhupada's prasadam pastimes. We were talking last night about the establishment of restaurants, and this morning we'll hear a little something about Prabhupada's opinion about foodstuffs that have been prepared by non-devotees. So, because that's always a topic, devotees want to know what's offerable and what's not. Prabhupada was very clear about that. And on April the 6th, 1976, when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, he got a letter from Purudas, who was living in Los Angeles at that time. It had been sent in February, but it was kind of delayed. It missed Prabhupada in different places. But Purudas had written concerning the temple purchasing some sour cream that was known to have rennet, which is the extract from the stomach lining of a calf, in it, and another batch that had gelatin in it. The rationale that was used was that almost everything in Kali Yuga is contaminated, and Srila Prabhupada previously allowed the purchase of white sugar that had, that was bleached over animal bones, and he had also allowed the purchase of milk that had fish liver oil added to it. A further motivation was the very cheap purchase price of 5 cents per pound. Therefore, the GBC, Jayatirtha Das, had consented to the purchase of the sour cream because the amount of rennet in it was very small, about 1 cubic centimeter per 150 gallons, or in other words, 1/50,000th of an ounce per pint. So somebody had done some math there. Still, despite the seemingly insignificant quantity, some devotees were disturbed by its use, and thus Purawid requested a direct statement from Srila Prabhupada to settle up the matter. He said, "It seems to me, although I am a fallen, fault-finding rascal, that only Srila Prabhupada can say whether this sour cream is offerable to the deity and can be used. I certainly don't know. There are valid arguments on both sides, but the only real point is whether or not Krishna is pleased with such offerings, and only his pure devotee can tell us that." He added as a postscript that the temple now has 400 pounds of this sour cream in the refrigerator, and somebody had reasoned that Prabhupada would not want to see the sour cream wasted. Puru wanted to know if they should use it up, never buy it again, dump it, or continue to use it and not be agitated over its contents. Srila Prabhupada's reply was short and clear. "Concerning the use of sour cream in the temple," he said, "it should be stopped immediately. Nothing should be offered to the deities which is purchased in the stores. Things produced by the karmis cannot be offered to Radha and Krishna. Sour cream, if you can prepare it, it is okay, but not otherwise. Now, you have such a big stock of this sour cream, so sell that stock at any cost. Who is the rascal who has purchased without permission?" So that was pretty clear, definitive. It's prepared by the karmis, then you can't offer it to the deities. If you buy the raw materials and then the devotees prepare it, that is offerable. But if it's already pre-prepared, let's say, by the karmis, then that's not offerable. So Prabhupada was really clear. Another aspect of that was frozen food, which was also something Prabhupada was not very happy with. On August the 2nd, 1976, we were in New Mayapur, and I was giving Srila Prabhupada his evening massage. So this was like about 10 o'clock at night. I got in the habit of leaving on the recorder, even whilst I was giving him his evening massage, just in case Prabhupada said something that was... Because Prabhupada, everything Prabhupada said was significant. But sometimes in the evening massage, he would just lay there silently and not say anything. And sometimes he would be quite talkative. And he would, you know, bring up a topic that had come up during the day's proceedings and make some comments about it. Just like when we... The first time I traveled with him, we went to Kurukshetra for one day. We had a look around. we saw this area called Brahma Sarovar, which is the main bathing area there. And then after looking around that area, then in the afternoon we went to another area, Jyotisar, which is a much smaller kund. And there's a lot less tourism or pilgrimage that people go there. But when we looked around that place, there was a banyan tree and there was a deity of Krishna and Arjuna on a chariot. And it was said that that was the actual spot where Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. Whether or not, who knows, but at least it was being worshipped in that way. And there were a couple of very small little, you know, simple temples there. One, I think, to Lakshmi and like that. So we looked around that area. And then when we came back to Delhi in the evening, then I gave Prabhupada his massage, again about 10 o'clock. And as Prabhupada laid down, he said, "So, how did you like Kurukshetra?" So I said, "Well, I thought it was very nice, Srila Prabhupada. It was the first time I'd ever been." Prabhupada said, "Yes, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita there." So just little comments you got like that. Just Prabhupada confirmed that was the spot, Jyotisar, where the Bhagavad Gita had been spoken. So again, on this evening in New Mayapur, then Prabhupada was laying there on the bed in the half light, and I mentioned to him that I had heard that some of the temples were using frozen foods for their deity offerings. Prabhupada shook his head and he gave a sour look. Tamasic food, tamasic activities. It is going on simply by Krishna's mercy. So that was a short and sweet comment. It's all in Tamagun, frozen food. Now, that was on August the 2nd. Then on August the 10th, we left France and we were in Tehran, in Iran. Of course, in those days, you could still go into the place. Westerners were welcome because the Shah of Iran was still in charge. And we had a nice center there with a group of devotees. There was Atreya Rishi Prabhu and his wife, because Atreya Rishi was an Iranian. Then there was Navayovana and his wife. They were actually Atreya Rishi and Navayovana. They were living together in the same apartment before they became devotees. So they knew each other from a long time. And so he had gone to Tehran to assist Atreya Rishi in the preaching there. They just had a new baby son. And there was Dayananda and Nandarani Prabhus. And they had been sent there during the Mayapur festival. So some months previously. So he had gone there to assist. And they were all working during the day, and then they were preaching in their evening time or at the weekends when they weren't working. And Nandarani, she was an expert cook. She had set up like a small Sunday school kind of thing for kids. And they were doing some preaching work there with the small Hindu population that was there in Tehran. So I found out that she was freezing vegetables. And so I commented to her, "Well, last week, Prabhupada just told me this is all tamagun. It's all tamasic activity. So I don't know whether you should be doing this." So then she got a little concerned about it. We went to Srila Prabhupada to ask him what he thought. So this is on August the 10th. Prabhupada came down into the kitchen this morning to talk with Nandarani about her efforts to conserve vegetables by bottling and freezing them. I had expressed concern to her when I heard that she was doing this because of what Prabhupada said in France about frozen foods being tamasic. She explained to him that in the winter time in Tehran, no vegetables whatsoever are available. So Prabhupada consented and told her that it was all right to go ahead and do it. Once again demonstrating his willingness to adjust devotional activity according to time, place, and circumstance. So on the one hand, he said it's all tamagun. But on the other hand, in this circumstance, there was no choice. If they didn't conserve the vegetables, then they wouldn't have anything to eat during the winter time. So Prabhupada said, "Fine, go ahead and do it." Then again it came up on November the 3rd, a couple of months later, we were in Vrindavan, we were discussing various things, and the topic of preaching in Moscow or in Russia, that came up. So Hansa Dudaswami, he was there. He had been several times to Moscow, and he had visited with Srila Prabhupada's only Russian disciple, Anantashanti Prabhu. So Hansa Dutta and Prabhupada shared some observations and realizations about the poor quality of life in Russia. Anantashanti's entire family lives in a couple of rooms half the size of Srila Prabhupada's Vrindavan Darshan room. Prabhupada noted that the taxi drivers were begging for money, not just getting tips, but they were begging for money because they were so poor. And the only vegetables available, he said, were frozen. Prabhupada screwed his face a little in disgust. "That is also nasty," he said. "Frozen means nasty. I never take frozen. In the beginning I thought, oh, it's very nice, you can get fresh vegetable. But they're not at all fresh, all rotten. Rather, the same vegetable, as we've got in India, the practice is that we dry it and then we keep it. And that is tasteful. In the season time, suppose that in the season, there is a huge quantity of vegetables. So here the system is that they cut it into pieces during the season and dry it in the sun and then keep it. And during the out of season, it is soaked in water and that revives the old taste and then you can cook it." Speaking of vegetables made him reflect once again on the glories of a simple rural life, devoid of grand material endeavor. "This I want to introduce," he said. "Let them be satisfied, whatever they can produce themselves locally." What is that? A little cloth, a little food? And any man can produce these things. There is no difficulty at all. They must agree to this simple life. Everywhere you can produce your own food and cloth and cottage. If possible, you can construct big buildings, but there's no need. And they should be satisfied, happy with Krishna. Then life is successful. This I want to introduce now, anywhere, and it is practical. It is not something bogus. So we've already experimented. By God's grace, we can produce everything from the lands. Sava kama duga mahi. So you get everything from the land. And if they are satisfied with this simple life, then they save time for Krishna consciousness and happy life. So Prabhupada was always very keen on rural life. We had visited Gitanagari during 76. We also went to the farm in France. That was 200 acres. And Prabhupada was very keen on promoting. And actually in 76, 77, he was really pushing this idea of establishing farming communities. We read last night a little something about the Hyderabad farm and what Prabhupada wanted to achieve there. Mayapur also, we were doing the same thing. So Prabhupada was very, you know, keen for the devotees to take up that kind of simple life. But unfortunately, that's one aspect of the Krishna consciousness movement that we have yet to properly implement. We're still addicted to electricity and technology. And until we give up that addiction, I think that this simple life idea, that will be very difficult for us to bring about. Prabhupada said four things. Build your own house, grow your own food, make your own cloth, and grow your own medicine. If you can do those four things, then you don't require anything from outside. So, in my travels around, I haven't seen too many places where we've got even anywhere near that standard, which is unfortunate. We have a lot of farms in ISKCON, but somehow or another, we haven't been able to manifest this idea. But Prabhupada, at least, was very keen on it. And I remember when we actually came here in June, the last week of June, in 1976, here to New Vrindavan, then Prabhupada was staying in, it may be the house that's opposite the palace now, or a bit further away. Anyway, one of the devotees' houses. Was that the house? A little further away. Okay. So anyway, we were staying in this house. There was a nice lawn outside, and there was like a hedgerow and everything, separating it from the road. but all that, you know, I was giving Prabhupada his massages out on the lawn there. And all the time there's motorcycles and cars and trucks going up and down like this. And Prabhupada asked me, what is that? And I said, well, that's the devotees. You know, they have all these, you know, this equipment and things. So Prabhupada laughed and he quoted this Bengali saying that I live in the jungle and I eat grasshoppers. Yeah? But for going to pass stool, I ride on a white horse. So, in other words, I'm living very simply, like a renunciate, just eating some insect or something. But, just for the business of going passing stool, I have to have a big arrangement. Yeah, a big white horse, which requires so much maintenance, etc. So he said, this is their renunciation. And then he laughed. He said, anyway, something's better than nothing. Because I'd also informed him that, although, you know, we have so many, I think, a couple of thousand acres, was it, at that time? Yeah. I said they still buy, I had heard that the devotees were still buying their vegetables from the local market, because apparently it was cheaper to do that than to grow it themselves. So then Prabhupada said, you know, I was kind of like a little bit critical of that. Prabhupada, you know, he dismissed my, implied criticism. He said, anyway, he said, at least the intention is there. So it was being very generous. You know, that at some point maybe they'll actually do it. So, you know, this is New Vrindavan. That was Prabhupada's comment. As far as this thing about, actually I'd better just add that in on here. Okay. On this point about drying things, Prabhupada, when we were in Hawaii, he had written back to some of the devotees in India, and he told them, the devotees in Hawaii, we were getting these wonderful mangoes every day. They were just falling from the trees. And the devotees would go out in the morning, and just hundreds of mangoes were lying all over the area. Nobody bothers to pick them. So the devotees would pick them, and we would have these mangoes for breakfast. So Prabhupada told the devotees that they should slice them up, dry them on trays in the sun, and then you can make these, this like a candy it is you get in India. It's like strips of dried mango. He said that way you can preserve it and then eat it when the season is over. So he liked that kind of system. Now as far as, of course, unofferable foods, and foods forbidden for devotees. Of course, meat is the main one. And Prabhupada did, of course, make a few comments about meat eating and meat eaters. On December the 11th, 1975, we were in Vrindavan. Prabhupada was giving a class on the 7th canto, 6th chapter, verse 9. That reads, who is the person who is too much attached to household life on account of being unable to control the senses, and who can liberate himself because he is bound up very strongly with the rope of affection for the family, namely wife, children, relatives, etc. So after reading out the Sanskrit, Prabhupada recalled an earlier morning's conversation and explained the difference between the scientist's approach to life and that of a devotee. He said the materialists derive their enjoyment from killing, not knowing that this only increases their problems. But the devotees solve all their problems and attain happiness by cultivating detachment. He illustrated this by citing an incident from his early days of preaching in the West. He said, the examples are there, so although you were young boys and girls, you have given up so many nonsense things. This is called vairagya, detachment. Meat eating is the general life of the Europeans and Americans. But at the present moment, if somebody offers you millions of dollars and he requests you that you take some meat with me, I think you will deny. So this is called vairagya. And I have actually seen our Gargamuni, he was sent to his father. So I had advised him that your father has a big business, So you just take it for Krishna consciousness. So the father was very glad, but then he offered him some meat. So Gagamuni, his father, was, he wanted him to come and take over the family business. So Prabhupada said, yeah, go back home, take the business and use it for Krishna. So he went. But then when he went home, then he sat to eat with his family, and his father immediately wanted him to eat meat. So when Gagamuni said, father, I cannot eat meat. So then the father became very angry, and he drove him away. Hiranyakashipu father. So Gagamuni came back. So the young man, father's property, he refused to take it. So this is Vairagya. And the whole Krishna consciousness movement means Vairagya Vidya, the education of detachment. So that was one example Prabhupada gave. But then there were some occasions when Prabhupada actually said that meat eating was okay, surprisingly. Or not exactly okay, but in some circumstances it may be done. One example of that was later on we were in Vrindavan, that was September the 29th in 1976, and Prabhupada had been heavily involved in trying to improve the management there. Whenever we went to Vrindavan, it was always a big frustration because Prabhupada was never satisfied with, you know, the level of management. Somehow or another, the managers that we had there were not very expert. And as soon as Prabhupada came, he would spend 2 or 3 weeks getting involved in trying to sort the management out. And usually what happened was that after 2 or 3 weeks of trying and not getting, you know, the proper response, then Prabhupada would just kind of give up. And he would just, you know, have to accept whatever they could do. But on this occasion, he actually changed the management. And Akshayananda Swami, he had been the temple president, so Prabhupada made him his secretary. And Hazaduda Swami was there, so he decided to give him a chance to see if he could improve things. So we were talking in the evening in Prabhupada's garden at the back of his house there. And a little later in the conversation, Hazaduda offered to print some books in India. And although Prabhupada confirmed that this was his main concern, to get huge quantity of his books printed in Hindi and English, he told Hazaduta that for now, he should simply concentrate on making the guest house in Vrindavan successful. So that was one of his chief bonds of contention, if you like. And he said, I've spent 25 lakhs on building this guest house, but nobody's coming. At that time, nobody was there. Most of the rooms were empty, and they weren't making anything at all. And he calculated that if I'd have invested that money in fixed deposits, then I'd be earning so much interest every month. But right now I'm losing because I invested it in this guest house and nothing is coming as a return. So he was quite unhappy about that. And so he told Hazaduta, just make this guest house successful. That will be your first achievement as the new manager. So he said, that actually having a guest house attached to a temple was his Guru Maharaj's idea, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He said, I'm just following the desire of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He chuckled as he spoke about his spiritual master's strong desire to preach and spread Krishna consciousness. He said that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had so stressed the importance of having people come to a temple that he said that even if they have to be served meat, by any means, they should be induced to come and hear about Krishna. Hazaduta and I were quite amazed to hear this. We must have looked a little shocked because Prabhupada immediately reassured us. He said, of course, we'll never serve meat. But the idea is that if the visitors feel too much inconvenience from our rules, then some arrangement can be made for them to have tea or coffee or even betel or bidi. Not exactly in our guest house, but some kind of shop may be in the front at the Gurukul building where they can get these things. So we can even bring them tea into the guest house if need be. But we want that people will come. We want to give them the opportunity for spiritual life, and therefore we have a temple and guest house combined. So that was a pretty revolutionary statement. I'd never heard it up until that point. I remember looking at Hazaduta. We were both kind of like, our jaws dropped up when Prabhupada said that. He He said, no, because we won't really do that, but he said, it's for emphasis. So we left the garden, appreciating once again how Srila Prabhupada has inherited the revolutionary mantle of his Guru Maharaj. He is prepared to go to practically any length to induce people to take to Krishna consciousness. And there was actually one time when he gave a serious instruction that meat could actually be eaten by his disciples. Harikesh had started preaching in Eastern Europe, and there were a couple of apparently contradictory incidents with involving Harikesh and meat eating. So the first one was that when we had gone down to Nellore in South India, this was on January the 3rd, we were invited, Prabhupada was invited to open a new temple there, and there were two sisters that had two plots of land, and they were going to donate that land to ISKCON. And so Prabhupada went down there, we stayed with those two sisters in their house, and he was going to lay a foundation stone for this new temple. And the devotees had been preaching in Nellore and made a lot of life members on the basis that we were going to have this temple. So when we arrived there, you know, we naturally thought the two sisters would be very, you know, happy and enthusiastic that Prabhupada had come there, personally come there to their house, and, you know, that we were just about to inaugurate this project. But when we arrived, it was very strange. We got it settled into the house, and we noticed that the two sisters' reception of Srila Prabhupada was cordial, but there was a distinct coolness in their temperament, which everybody noticed. They gave Prabhupada a small but pleasant room with a grilled-in veranda. We servants were shown into a room directly above Prabhupada's on the roof. Prabhupada immediately got ready for his massage. So we sat out on the veranda, and as I began to apply the oil to his head, we heard a familiar clucking noise from across the pathway. "What is that?" Prabhupada asked. I looked out through the grilled window, and I saw a hen coop, chickens. "It's chickens," Srila Prabhupada. "Oh, then, that means?" I said, "Well, it means at least they're eating eggs," trying to be optimistic, of course. So he said, "Call Harikesh." Harikesh was doing Prabhupada's cooking. Harikesh came in, he was visibly disturbed. "Srila Prabhupada, these people are meat eaters." "Oh, then you must cook separately," he said. "You cannot cook in their kitchen. Do not use any of their pots and utensils." So that was Prabhupada's reaction, of course, you know, as you would naturally expect. And Harikesh had to make up a whole separate arrangement. We wouldn't even set foot in their kitchen. Because later on it turned out these sisters, Prabhupada figured they were trying to cheat us. There were some stipulations in the deed of gift for giving this land, that if ISKCON didn't complete the project within 3 years, then it would be taken back by the sisters, and then they would have the right to give it to some other charitable organization, such as the Ramakrishna Mission of Calcutta. And they also stipulated that when we built, we had to build a temple, a meditation hall, and a library. Like a multi, you know, denominational library. So Prabhupada, you know, immediately he said, "Well, this is what the Ramakrishna Mission do. They build a meditation hall, they have a temple, and they have this kind of library." And he said, "You know, this is a plot. They're going to get us to come in and start building, and then before we can finish, somehow or another, they'll delay the building until the 3 year period is up. Then they'll have the right to take it back, and then they'll give it to the Ramakrishna Mission." So he said, they're sannyasis, of course. He said, you know, they have relationships with women, they're meat eaters, and they do all these things. And of course, Prabhupada had written a play in the 1940s, started writing a play called The Morgi Mission. Morgi means chicken. So it was actually a satirical, you know, commentary on the Ramakrishna Mission and their so-called sannyasis. They don't actually observe anything. They drink wine, they eat meat, they have, you know, illicit relationships, and still they pose as sannyasis. So Prabhupada said, "This is a plot." He said these two ladies, they're single ladies, one was a widow and one had never married. He said they would be easy targets. And so he figured out this whole thing was just a scheme. So he gave them a chance. You just give the land without any preconditions and we'll build. We'll still do it. But later on, after some negotiation, they refused to change the stipulations in the deed of gift. And so Prabhupada said, all right, dig up the foundation stone. And we actually did that. The devotees went, Bhavabhuti and Shravanananda, they were in Madras. So they went over to Nellore. We'd installed an Anantashesha, actually, in the hole. They dug the whole thing up and took the foundation stone away. So Prabhupada refused to deal with them because of that. But anyway, that was the symptom. They were meat eaters. So it was a very unusual situation. Normally, you know, Prabhupada got invited to some life member's house. At least they were vegetarians. You know, they might eat onions and things like this, but at least, you know, they weren't eating meat. So it was, that was a problem for us at that point. But later on, some months later, Harikesh left the party. He was given sannyas. And then he ended up going to Eastern Europe. And he began preaching there. So on September the 12th, 1976, this is like 9 months after that incident in Nellore, then Harikesh had come back on the party as Prabhupada's secretary. But he was still keeping up his connections with the preaching in Eastern Europe. So he received a letter from Dwarakesh Das and Prabhujak Das. They'd been touring Yugoslavia. Because Yugoslavia was not strictly communist. It was communist, but it wasn't as bad as, you know, Hungary and Poland and, you know, the rest of the Soviet Union. It was a little bit more open. But still, you know, there were secret police everywhere. When the devotees went around, they were being followed by the secret police. They were being harassed like that. They were actually risking, you know, their freedom by going and preaching in these places. So Harikesh Maharaj discussed with Srila Prabhupada some of the practical problems in keeping the Eastern European program going. In the course of their exchange, Prabhupada revealed the radical steps that he was prepared to take to ensure that this preaching go on. Harikesh began to explain that apart from the risks involved with the authorities, one big obstacle was a lack of funding. He said that even something as basic as finding something to eat was a major difficulty. So if there's nothing else, Prabhupada told him, you can eat meat if you have to. Harikesh's mouth dropped open a little bit and his eyes widened. Not knowing if Prabhupada was serious or not, he tried to ignore what he had just heard and he continued to say that even if they had money, there was nothing that they could buy to eat. Completely serious, Prabhupada told him again, so if there's difficulty, you can eat meat. Harikesh stopped. He appeared dazed as he contemplated the possible implications. But, Prabhupada, what about my consciousness? Damn your consciousness, Prabhupada replied. You must go on preaching. So that was it. He got an instruction. Because they never had to do that, but, you know, Prabhupada was quite prepared. In some circumstances, the preaching was so important, you can sacrifice anything in order to go out and preach. So, another example of, you know, meat-eating Leela, because Prabhupada, you know, sometimes he would tell us about his childhood activities. So when we were in New Mayapur on August the 2nd in 76, we were talking about how meat-eating was such an integral part of Western society. I described how neither myself nor my nephew had had a taste for meat as children, but we were forced to accept it until we developed a liking for it. I didn't like meat actually when I was a young kid, but you know, it was just, that was it. You had to eat your meat. Eat your meat. So, you know, gradually you get a taste for that. So Prabhupada told us one of his own childhood anecdotes. He said, when I was 1.5 years old, I was suffering from typhoid. So Dr. Kartik Chandra Bose, he said, please give him chicken juice. So my father refused. No, no, we cannot. No, he has to be given. He has become too much weak. But my father said, no, I cannot allow. So then the doctor said, don't mind, I shall prepare it in my house and I will send it. And then you simply give it to him. So he took it. And my father thought that, well, okay, he's the doctor. So it was sent from the doctor's house. And when it was given to me, immediately I began to vomit. And my father, then he threw it away. So then when the doctor asked what was the result, and then he said, okay, all right, then don't bother. So this was the story that I heard. So this allopathic system of medicine introduced all these things into India. Otherwise, they did not know. So Prabhupada said, the moment that the spoon touched his lips, he started throwing up. Then his father took that. That was a sign from Krishna. Don't give him this. So he threw it all away. So lamenting the horrible condition of modern society, Prabhupada said, this meat eating, chicken juice, tea, these things were all unknown in India. No, why in India? By nature, you say that you refuse meat, so although you were born of a father and mother of meat eaters, still you were refusing. So what a horrible civilization they have made. He's a human being, born, but making him an animal by culture. Instead of making him more cultured towards spiritual life, they're making him redirected again into animal life. This is the Western civilization. So that was another one. Then there was another story that Prabhupada would tell sometimes about when he was traveling on the aeroplane. So we're December the 5th, 1976, we were there in Hyderabad, and we were just chit-chatting, and Prabhupada was saying how man is the architect of his own fortune. He said, fortune and misfortune you have created. So we have to suffer or we have to so-called enjoy. He said, actually, there's no enjoyment here. It is simply suffering. But because you were under Maya, you were taking suffering as enjoyment. Just like a hog is eating stool. So another man is becoming, he said, oh, very abominable. What a nasty thing. But he's enjoying that. He is thinking, I am enjoying the best food. I saw in an aeroplane, one Indian gentleman, he was eating the intestines of a hog. So it was horrible for me, but he was eating and thinking, oh, it is very nice. So in this way, the world is going on. One man's food is another man's poison. Similarly, we are creating our next birth according to our desires. So he said the man was right next to him and he was eating hog's intestines. The hog is eating stool and he's eating the intestines of the stool eater. Just think how horrible that is. So there were other things that came up. Prabhupada also, he once told us about when the devotees in the Gaudiya Math, they had gone to Burma. This was in a class he was giving on February 29th in 1976 in Mayapur. So in his lecture this morning, Prabhupada vividly described about the covering power of Maya and how it influences a person's sense of enjoyment. He explained that in Burma, they have a drink called nafi. People keep a special pot in which they place the dead bodies of animals, which are then left to decompose. Later, after some years, the fluids are drained and bottled and then drunk at festivals. The animals go rotten in a pot and then they drain that fluid and drink it. Nafi. So when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's men opened the center in Rangoon, they were cooking puris in ghee. So the neighborhood people were complaining about the horrible smell. And they're drinking this decomposed animal juice. And there were other stories that Prabhupada was told about, you know, how in Hong Kong, they have some system, they get some live monkey and they chop off the top of the head and they actually eat the brains when it's still fresh. Prabhupada was, you know, completely, he couldn't believe it that they were doing such things. Another thing, of course, in Prabhupada was brought up in West Bengal, and the Bengalis and the Ariyas, they love fish. They can't stop eating fish, practically. And Prabhupada told us a few stories about that. when we were in Hyderabad on August the 22nd in 1976, Mahamsaswamy had come to Srila Prabhupada. There were some young girls that were coming to the temple every day. They wanted to be initiated. They were very seriously following. They were like 14, 15 years old. So some of them are young and unmarried. So he had a question because he was recommending these girls for initiation, but he had a little doubt. And he said that, well, they may end up getting married to men who were not devotees. So he didn't know whether he should recommend them or not. So Prabhupada was not concerned. He said, but still she can chant and observe the rules and regulations. What is that? What, even if her husband doesn't follow, Mahamsa asked? That doesn't matter, Prabhupada said. It is all individual. My sister, when she was married, her father-in-law's house, so they were all eating fish. So she's a new girl, 10 years or 11 years old. So she was given all this food stuff with fish and everything. So she was crying. So then her mother-in-law asked her, oh, why are you crying? So she said, no, we don't touch all these things. So then she immediately arranged some special cooking for her. So the husband and other members, they were all eating fish, but she never touched. She never touched. She does not know what is fish. So if one wants to keep oneself pure, then he or she can keep herself pure in any circumstances. That was Prabhupada's younger sister, Bhavatarini. She got initiated also by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Her husband was a fish eater, and he was a drunkard also. She had to tolerate so many things. And Prabhupada just told her, keep your position as a devotee. He gave her his deities, actually, his personal deities, and she worshipped them for many years. And Prabhupada told her, you just serve Radha Govinda and take shelter of them, and they'll keep you safe. So she did that. Later on, I was told that when her husband became maybe in his late 40s or early 50s, he had some kind of major transformation and life change. And he stopped his drinking and all these things. And then he actually, practically he was worshipping his wife, Bhavatarini, that she was such a great devotee. And she actually, helped him to rectify his life. So it took a lifetime to do that. But she did it. She followed very faithfully Prabhupada. Whenever she had any problem, she would come to Srila Prabhupada and get advice for him about how to, conduct a family life. But Prabhupada never told her that, oh, he's a meat eater, leave him. He never said, no, you stay, but you keep your own principles. So the same thing with these young girls. He said, if they want, they can keep. Nothing can stop you. If you make the determination to follow the regulative principles, then no circumstance will budge that. So she was a good example. And again, about fish eating, Prabhupada told us about how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had made the comment that if somebody, any of his disciples, if they're not eating urd dal, he said, then they must be eating fish secretly. Because urd dal, when you cook it, it tastes just like fish. So, in other words, he's saying that the Bengalis, they have such a strong taste for this fish eating, that if they're not eating urd dal, then they must be eating fish in secret because they can't give up the taste. And there was another story. We were in Mayapur in 1977, and some of the Bengali ladies, they were cooking maybe 20, 30 different sabji preparations every day for Srila Prabhupada, and they would bring them up on these big wooden platters, and then Prabhupada would try them all out. So one day they gave him jackfruit, because jackfruit is a fruit, but you can also cook it as a sabji when it's green. So they gave him this jackfruit sabji, and when Prabhupada saw it on his plate, he said, oh, tree goat. I said, what's that, Srila Prabhupada, tree goat? And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, I have never experienced, but they say that this jackfruit, when it's cooked like this as a sabji, because it's like very fibrous, he said, they say it tastes just like goat flesh. So in Bengal, they call it tree goat. Yeah, it grows on the tree, but it tastes like a goat. Did you know that? Yeah. And then there was a story Prabhupada told me one time when we were in Bhubaneswar. This was in late January of 77. Prabhupada had gone there to do the foundation stone ceremony for the temple there. So in the morning, we were sitting out in the open. And we just had a very vacant plot of land there. There was a little cottage, brick, with a thatched roof on it, and that was the only building. And we were outside, I was massaging Prabhupada, sitting on the dry ground there. And Prabhupada heard a goat bleating in the background. You know, mah, 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 like this, it was going on. And then all of a sudden he burst out laughing. And I looked at him, and Prabhupada told me this story. He said, this goat, he said, they are very unfortunate. He said, because, you know, they're reared in India just for killing. So he said, one time, a goat, he went before Lord Brahma, because Lord Brahma, he makes all the bodies, yeah, for the living beings. So the goat came to him, and Lord Brahma asked him, yes, what is that? So then the goat was lamenting that you give me such a body that all the time we're being killed and eaten. So please do something. So Lord Brahma was looking at the goat, but he was silent. And then the goat looked at him and said, well, what is that? And then Lord Brahma said, I think you'd better leave. In other words, Lord Brahma was also hinting that if you stay here long enough, then I may also kill you and eat you. So that was a story Prabhupada told me when I was giving him a massage, how unfortunate the goat is, that there's not even Lord Brahma is thinking of doing the same thing. Okay, so other non-devotional foods, because we have our principles, no, you know, meat eating, but also no onions, no eggs, no tea, coffee like this. So October 9th, 1976, Prabhupada had gone to Aligarh, which is about an hour from Vrindavan. We were staying at the house of Mr. Surendra Kumar Saigal. He was the owner of this Tiger Lock company. So after we arrived, and there was a nice reception for Prabhupada, then he settled into his room. And then Mr. Saigal came into Prabhupada's room for some suggestions for making his breakfast. And also he had heard that Prabhupada's health was not good. So he had some suggestions. You know, Prabhupada had some heart problems. And I asked Mr. Saigal if he could get us some Ghrita Kumari, or aloe vera, as it is known in the West. Arjuna and Tamal Mahaprabhu were two American devotees that had come the week before to Vrindavan, and they had suggested aloe vera for Srila Prabhupada's high blood pressure because it helps to clean out their arteries. So Mr. Saigal happily informed us that he had the plant growing in his garden. He said that his wife takes it regularly by stuffing it into chapatis or parathas, and she finds it quite efficacious for relieving pains in her knees. Mr. Saigal, though, suggested that garlic was the best for relieving high blood pressure. Prabhupada wrinkled his nose and he grimaced slightly. Garlic. Mr. Saigal smiled at Prabhupada's reaction. Garlic, you don't want it. And then they both laughed together. Prabhupada told him, garlic, onions, these things are prohibited. So it was settled up that his wife would cook aloe vera chapatis for breakfast. Prabhupada asked Gaurasundara Prabhu if he knew of it, and he confirmed that they had it in Hawaii. He added that it could also be used externally for skin diseases, burns, and cuts. So Mr. Saigal left Prabhupada's room to go and prepare breakfast, and Prabhupada concluded, this body is simply troublesome. So that was, you know, no garlic, even for medicinal purposes. And Prabhupada was so strict about this, that one time in December of 76, we'd come back to Bombay, and there was a man there, Mr. P.L. Sethi. He's still alive. Now he's about 93 or 4, yeah, Sethi? Very, very nice man, and completely dedicated to Srila Prabhupada. He was never initiated, but he was one of our First Life members in Bombay. And when Prabhupada first got our Juhu Beach property, there were 6 buildings on that property, and all 2 stories each, apartment buildings. And they were all filled up. So although we bought the property, we weren't able to move the tenants out. So our devotees were living in a tent, actually, when they first moved onto the land. And Prabhupada decided to build an extra floor on top of each building. So Mr. Sethi was the contractor that he engaged in doing that. But Mr. Sethi became very, very favorable, and he liked Srila Prabhupada a lot. So whenever Prabhupada came to Bombay, his wife would always cook something, some preparation for Prabhupada's breakfast. And they lived a short distance away, so we would bring it over. So on this particular occasion, he brought some preparation. I don't know, it was some kind of rice thing or something. Utma, something like that, in a pot. So he brought that for Prabhupada's breakfast. I took the pot off him. He stayed in the reception room. I took it into Prabhupada's sitting room where he was eating. And I put it on his table, and I said, "This is from Mr. Sethi." And then I took the lid off, and then Prabhupada immediately kind of smelled, and he said, "What is this?" He said, "What is that smell?" So I smelt it, and it smelt like onions. So he said, "Go and ask him, what's in this?" So I went out, and I asked Mr. Sethi, I said, "You know, that preparation, it smells like it's got onion in it." So he said, "No, no." He said, "Absolutely no onions." He said, "Because we eat onions." But he said, "I know Prabhupada's standards." He said, "We never cook anything for Prabhupada that has onions or anything like that in it." I said, "Well, what about the pot? Maybe, you know, you cooked it in a pot that you use for cooking onions." He said, "No, no, we use, you know, separate pots and everything." So I went back and I told Srila Prabhupada this. Prabhupada said, "Take it away." He said, "Give it to me back." He said, "I won't take it." So just because it smelled like onions, he wouldn't touch it. Mr. Sethi was very disappointed. But there's nothing he could do. So that was Prabhupada. He was strict. And I saw that even on the aeroplanes, Prabhupada would not accept even the salt and pepper, yeah, from the aeroplanes. And he wouldn't use their utensils unless they were plastic, because the plastic ones were brand new and had not been used. But the metal ones, of course, they were used by other people and then washed. So Prabhupada wouldn't touch them. So when we traveled on the aeroplanes, we had to, you know, cook everything, and we carried it in a tiffin box. And that included, you know, ginger, salt, pepper, all the different spices, so that Prabhupada didn't have to have anything from the airline. The only thing that he let us have was, you know, they would come around with cordial or, you know, some fruit juice drink. So in those days they used to serve cordial. Prabhupada didn't take it, but he allowed me to drink it when we were traveling to Australia. We got some like that. And one time I think Prabhupada had some 7-Up. A couple of times he had 7-Up. But apart from that, that was the only time I saw him take anything, you know, from the Kalis. So, because another thing, somebody asked the other night about chocolate. Who was that? Somebody was asking me the other day about chocolate. Anyway, I was asked whether there was any time when I'd heard Prabhupada say anything about eating chocolate. And in fact, there was one very specific incident. This was in late November 1976. There was a devotee called Mahavir. He's down in Alachua. And he had just moved to India. He'd come to India to, you know, basically because he knew Prabhupada spent a lot of time there. And he turned up at the Krishna Balaram Mandir about November the 10th. So as soon as he walked in the door, Prabhupada immediately made him one of the general managers for the temple. He'd been very successfully preaching in Brazil before and had very good results. So Mahavir was a kind of a very energetic person, little rotund, but very enthusiastic and always very jolly and joking. So he immediately, you know, got into trying to improve things there at the Krishna Balaram Mandir. So he decided to open up a little snack bar up at the front of the temple. Because in those days there was no samadhi. Now when you come in through the front entrance, there's Prabhupada's Samadhi on either side. But in those days, there was nothing. It was all open. And on the right-hand side, as you came in the gate, there was a well. It was kind of covered over, but there was a well there. And so he built a snack bar just on that side, and he put some seating and like that. So on November the 25th, I went up to the front gate in the evening to check out the fair at the new snack bar that Mahavir Prabhu was set up. Situated just inside and to the right of the front entrance as you enter our property, it sells French fries, lassi, kachuris, and other small snacks. With three picnic tables provided, it has quickly become a social spot for the devotees, especially after the evening arati. Now that the weather is getting colder, a few people like to gather, have a fried snack, a hot drink, and a chat. So when I walked up, the first thing that I saw was a small sign on the counter advertising hot drinking chocolate. "Hey Maha, that's not bona fide," I told Mahavir. "What's not bona fide?" Mahavir responded, looking concerned. "That hot drinking chocolate. You can't serve chocolate." "No, drinking chocolate is different. It's okay. Prabhupada said it's okay." "Oh, did you ask him?" I asked him suspiciously. "Well, no, but drinking chocolate isn't the same as regular chocolate. "Of course it is," I said. "It's chocolate. How can it be any different?" "Well, how do you know that chocolate isn't bona fide?" he asked me. "Well, when I first joined," I told him, "I was told you can't offer chocolate. It's like coffee. It's got caffeine in it." "No, I don't think it does. I heard it was okay." So like this, we were debating. So he wasn't willing to concede, and I could see that several others who were gathered there also thought that the hot drinking chocolate was a good idea. So then I said, "Well, okay, let's go and ask Srila Prabhupada." So he agreed that was a good idea, and it would settle the matter clearly. So we went straight to Prabhupada's darshan room, where he was sitting quietly chanting on his beads. "What is that?" Prabhupada asked pleasantly as we offered our obeisances and sat before him. "Well, the devotees are selling hot drinking chocolate at the new snack bar, Srila Prabhupada," I told him, "and I don't think it's bona fide. Mahavir Prabhu thinks that it is, so we thought we should ask you." "So what is it made from?" Prabhupada said thoughtfully. So Mahavir raced back up to the shop and brought back the can. He read out the ingredients. "It's mainly from cocoa," Srila Prabhupada. "Oh, cocoa. That means that's that cocoa bean? It comes from this?" "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." "All right. Well, then it is not all right. That cocoa bean you cannot take. That means caffeine." So that was it. The issue was settled, and hot drinking chocolate is no longer on the menu. So, if you're having any doubts, that's chocolate. Generally, most chocolate is made from this cacao bean. I think there's some other kinds of chocolate, maybe the white chocolate that's not, I'm not sure, but I think most devotees, they have that, what's the substitute for chocolate? Huh? Carob. They have carob bars, yeah. Okay, so that's a few things about, you know, things that you can't offer to Krishna. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Dharanjipa's wife, Vrindavan, she said that Prabhupada advised her to take this Coca-Cola and chocolate for 2 weeks herself.
Anyway, there's conflicting stories. Some people say, yes, that Prabhupada was given chocolate, I think when he was in Switzerland and other places, and that he ate it. But it's apparent that my understanding is that at that time, Prabhupada thought that it was just like an ordinary sweet, and he didn't really look into, you know, what the ingredients were that it was made from. Later on, when he found out that it was made from this cacao bean, then he said no. And that was very clear. This was at the end of November 76. So you have to take the last instruction. Yeah. Right, the final instruction. But he was clear. He asked what it was made from and when he heard. Coca-Cola's got caffeine. Everybody knows that. That's definitely out. Yeah, no caffeine.
Seven up.
Huh? Seven up, yeah. No caffeine, never had it, never will. They used to advertise on the can. No caffeine, never had it, never will. So Prabhupada didn't mind 7-Up. You had a question, Prabhu? Yeah, it's a famous story. People use that to justify eating chocolate. Of course, you're not going to hell for eating chocolate, I don't think. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu. About tofu. I never personally heard Prabhupada say anything about soya products. What I understood though, that in some Vaishnav circles, they won't eat certain kinds of dal because they're very high protein. And they're considered to be non-vegetarian because of the protein content is so high. And soya is one of those products. It's very high protein. So Vaishnavas generally, they tend to avoid things like that. They consider it to be non-vegetarian. And in some temples in India, they don't even eat, carrots, is it?
Carrot and
tomatoes. They won't eat them. So, it depends on your standards. But Prabhupada had no objection with carrot and tomatoes, at least. And I think that soy would probably be okay, in moderation. But you have too much, you get too much protein. That means, you know, you get a lot of passionate energy. So it's not good for spiritual life. Any other questions? Yes. Yeah. So there's a question about the foundation stone that was dug up in Nellore when Prabhupada decided to pull out from that project. Actually, what happens in the foundation stone ceremony, there's a murti of Anantashesha, small, he's put down because Anantashesha holds everything up. So he's put down in the ground, and then usually they put a few bricks there and, you know, do some ceremony. There's some different items that are offered, depending on the standard that you want to do. And then they usually have a plaque, like a big marble plaque, and it says, you know, the foundation stone for this temple was laid on such and such a date by the hand of such and such a person. So that plaque, Prabhupada had the devotees take it away, and they actually dug up the Anantashesha also and took him away. Yeah? Well, in all the temples that have been custom built, there was a foundation stone ceremony. In Mayapur, there was an Anantashesha put in the ground there by Prabhupada in 1971 or 72. And in Fiji, when Prabhupada went there in 1976, they had a foundation stone ceremony. So, you know, as much as possible, wherever you're building something new, you do this. It's part of the system for making it auspicious, getting Krishna's blessings. All right? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah. Yeah, the question is if Prabhupada was aware of what, you know, the practices are in commercial dairies and whether he found that milk to be acceptable to be offered to the deities. Prabhupada was fairly pragmatic about that matter because there was no milk available. You know, in the early days of the movement, we had no farms or anything like that. Then Prabhupada said, well, you should take the milk and you can offer it. So we were doing that. But, you know, later on, of course, as he got projects like Gita Nagari, New Vrindavan, he was very strongly, you know, pushing us to have cow protection programs and to, you know, get our own milk and offer that to the deity as, instead. So, you know, you can take it from another point of view also, that if you don't offer that milk from those commercial cows, if you like, to the deities, then that cow, you know, lives in vain. At least the cows that have supplied that milk, you know, they may be dealt with in very abominable, you know, conditions. But if you offer that milk to the deities, that cow's going to get that benefit from that. So that's something at least, you know, something auspicious in the life of, you know, that cow. Otherwise, you know, they're just born and bred and slaughtered and commercially exploited. So we don't look upon it as, in one sense, as participating in the exploitation of those cows. It's a chance to engage them in Krishna's service that they wouldn't normally get. So it's the only auspicious thing, you know, that they have in their lives practically. It depends on what angle of vision you want to look at it. But, you know, if it comes to it, we want our own cows, we want our own milk, you know, and those cows will be well looked after and protected, and that's the proper way to do it. All right? Okay, we'll finish at this point. If anybody would like to get more Prabhupada's pastimes, all of this, these anecdotes, they're all taken from this series of books that I've been writing, Transcendental Diary. There are 5 volumes so far. There'll be another 2 volumes to complete the series. So if you'd like to read about Srila Prabhupada's activities, pastimes, on a daily basis, more intimate, then these books are available. I have a couple of full sets left, and I also have quite a few copies of the 5th volume, the latest one. So if anybody would like to get those, you can see myself either now, or I'm staying in room number 10 here in the guest rooms there. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. And we'll be having another final session this evening at 7:30. And that'll be the last one. I'm leaving tomorrow to go to Europe. So that'll be your last chance. Thank you. Hare Krishna.